Welcome to the Australian Hiker Podcast, Australia's longest running hiking podcast, downloaded over 1 million times worldwide and providing you with an Australian perspective on all things hiking. We're your hosts, Tim and Jill Savage, coming to you from Ngunnawal and Ngambri country.
This is episode 285 of the Australian Hiker Podcast. And in this week's episode, we bring you part two of the Outdoor Adventure Expo 2024. We hope you enjoy. Before we get into today's episode, if you'd like to help support Australian Hiker and this podcast, there are a couple of ways that you can help us out. Firstly, by subscribing on your podcast host of choice so that each episode is available as soon as it's published. And if you have the opportunity, leave us a five-star review. Another way to support us is go to the Australian Hiker website at www.australianhiker.com.au and click on the support us page and buy us a coffee. You can do a one-off donation or become a monthly supporter. All donations are greatly appreciated and help us to continue producing this podcast and blog. Now let's get on to today's episode. In this podcast episode, we bring you a series of interviews we recorded at the recent Outdoor Adventure Expo in Melbourne, in addition to catching up with some suppliers outside of the expo. The second part of this podcast will include discussions on gear we managed to touch and play with, but didn't have the opportunity to undertake an interview for various reasons. And in the final segment of this episode, we'll go through and talk about where the industry is heading. For us, there's been a series of patterns, if you like, that have become more and more obvious as the time's gone by. And this has just been reinforced this year, along with some new ones which we hadn't really noticed before. To get the best out of this episode, we suggest you go to the Australian Hiker website to podcast episode 285 and go to the show notes, and we'll have a series of images and pictures from the product we are looking at to give you an idea of what it is we're talking about. So now we're going to talk to Adrian from Outdoor Agencies, and Adrian is the brand manager, amongst other things, for Smartwool. So thanks very much for taking the time to chat with us.
Oh, thank you, Tim, and good to meet you again, if remotely.
So tell us a bit about Smartwool. I think it's a name that a lot of people may be familiar with, but there are also a lot that don't really know the brand. So what are they and what's their focus?
So I guess Smartwool came around predominantly from the ski scene in the US back in the early 90s, and you know, at a point in time when I guess the market was riddled with synthetic everything, and we know polar fleece was the future and so were synthetic socks, and they basically realized that there's this really good thing called wool, which while Australia has an amount of that, and you know, we grew the country off the sheep's back, so to speak, it wasn't necessarily the case in the US, where it's definitely a beef country, I suppose. So Smartwool grew out of some enthusiasts, some skiers that started making some socks, and then it kind of went global from there. And you know, being an early adopter of wool, they inspired perhaps a little New Zealand company to launch and I guess really take over the Aussie market in a way that made Smartwool a bit harder for people to find. It was always here and it was always around, but it was definitely smaller. And it's Outdoor Agency's turn to kind of take that on and build that brand and get it around the place. So we're pretty excited to have Smartwool, and where Smartwool started and where they are now is massively different.
I'm familiar with the sock range, and I think that's probably what, if people know Smartwool, that's probably what they know it for. But are they just a sock manufacturer, or do they do other things?
Not at all. They are quite a massive company in terms of what they do. And I guess if we started at feet, you know, there's a sock for every occasion, whether it's a hike sock, a run sock, a colorful everyday sock, a ski sock. And then it kind of goes into, I mean, in the US, they even have a hunt sock. We go up and we're doing a whole version of base layers in a range of different colors and patterns. Then we move into that kind of next layer, and we have a summer range of running apparel that's super lightweight, even in the hottest Australian climates. We have a heap of insulation layers, whether it's that kind of second layer or an outer layer. They had a brief go at doing some wind resistant and waterproof stuff. Then they have their own version of intranet, which is, I guess, a technical weave beyond just base layer to a high performance base layer, I think is the best way to describe it. So, yeah, I mean, their range is massive. We do a little bit of apparel, and we have tried it, and it has been around for a little while. But again, you know, I guess in terms of base layers, there was that New Zealand player who came into the marketplace and absolutely dominated with black thermals here, there, and everywhere. And it's a hard thing to compete with for such a small brand.
I suppose, as I said, most people tend to know the socks. So with so many brands and models and varieties of socks on the market, what makes Smartwool different? Why are they so good?
Yeah, that's a good question, and one that probably might take a little while to explain. But I guess the first thing, and the thing that probably stands out as peculiar in terms of talking about a wool sock and the brand Smartwool, is that Smartwool are very good at using synthetic and elastic technology to really make their socks stand out and make them adaptable for lots of different applications. No one sock, as you know, Tim, is going to do every job, and it's going to suit every person. So I guess it's important to have a range of heights, a range of cushions, a range of breathabilities, a range of stretches for different applications, and of course certain fits for certain people. Obviously women with slightly narrower heels and ankles, they want a specific woman's fit. So there's a lot that goes into, I guess, the technical manufacture of the sock. But then there's also all the other things that we think about when we're buying products, or at least I think we should be thinking about when we're buying products. You know, where is that wool coming from? Is the farm sustainable? You know, are they using recycled polymer, if there's any polymer or plastics or polyesters, nylons in there? You know, where is it made, and what are they doing to make sure that, that, you know, it's best practice?
I suppose from my perspective, I really started wearing Smartwool socks probably just a little over 12 months ago. And the thing for me that I find that I like about them, I'm strange as a hiker goes. I love the Smartwool run socks. So these are obviously socks designed for runners, because for me, I find most hiking based socks tend to be a bit on the warm side, but I also want the cushioning that the socks provide as well. And I think the run socks, particularly the targeted cushion socks, are my favorite, where you've got the protection and the cushioning underneath the heel and the forefoot, but you've got that stretch that's provided by the synthetics and the breathability as well. So, I mean, I suppose, I mean, yeah, I know I'm a bit strange in some of my gear choices, but do you find that hikers will often gravitate towards the running socks, or it's a really an individual sort of thing?
Yeah, look, it is 100% individual. And for every person like you and I who says we want the thinnest sock possible because our feet overheat, there's probably just as many that say, no, I want thick, I want cushion, I want warmth and insulation. So, you know, I guess besides all of the variations in Smartwool socks, there's no rule, or hard and fast may it be, that says you have to wear a certain sock for a certain time. So for me, one of the biggest learnings I had in getting into Smartwool socks and having done a little backcountry skiing when I was younger, I always thought that, you know, the thickest socks were the best when it came to skiing. And in actual fact, it's the lightest and thinnest socks that are the most popular when it comes to ski customers in Australia. So I guess that goes to your point, and it totally depends on what people are into. So from what we call a silhouette point of view, I guess that's the first thing in terms of what people like. Some people really like to wear a sock that sits quite low on their ankle or even inside their shoe. So they do a sock for those. Then basically, you know, in inch or couple of inch increments all the way up your leg to a full crew sock. So not only is it thickness, but it's also that look of the sock and how it sits on your foot. I don't know, Tim, I think you said that you prefer a lower ankle sock when you're running, for example.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. For me, it's crew all the way. I don't know. Maybe I feel a little naked having my ankles showing to the public, but you know, my little twigs need that covering up. So I go for a crew sock all the time. And then I guess what you were saying before is then there's the cushion options. And so there's basically a zero cushion sock, which has nothing at all. And then there's targeted, which has an increased amount of cushion on the toe and the heel where we kind of need it most. And along with that, on all of the Smart Wool socks, they have basically this thing they call Indestructi-Wool, and it is that merging of synthetic and wool with more synthetic in those high wear areas around the toe and the heel, so that abrasion doesn't start wearing out your socks. If you had a wool sock that was pure wool inside a boot that was kind of your foot was moving around in, obviously that means it's probably not a correct fit, but you would find that wool sock wears out really fast. So having that Indestructi-Wool synthetic zone in there just helps the longevity and bang for buck for everyone buying a sock. And then so we've got zero cushion, targeted cushion, then we go to a light cushion, and that's mostly for the hike socks, and then a full cushion. And then in some of the more entry level socks, there's even an extra and a maximum cushion. I mean, for you and I, they would be the equivalent of you know, wearing them in the snow with a pair of thongs. So pretty extreme.
I also believe that Smart Wool as a company is running a recycling program. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so this is a pretty good initiative. Obviously, Smart Wool, as I said, have really kind of jumped into this sock market pretty early on and moved into a lot of different technologies and the way that they do things. And sustainability, excuse me, has always been a massive part of the Smart Wool story, to the point where all of their farms are a ZQ, which is a wool quality based out of New Zealand. It means that all of the farms are all practicing regenerative farming, where, you know, the farm is improving in its sustainability footprint and its resourcing every time it produces wool. And so that's a minimum requirement. And then a few years ago, they kind of realized that, well, actually, socks don't last forever. Realizing that, they came up with this concept called the second cut. And it started off in the States, where Smart Wool put boxes into some of their retailers, and people could bring back any pair of socks, drop them into this bin, and rather than go to landfill, they would basically take those and then repurpose that material. Some socks, obviously, with a high amount of synthetic and cottons and things like that, were separated out to be used in another application at some point in time. And those with high wool counts were separated into another bundle and then turned into a yarn. And then this coming season, we're seeing the launch of second cut socks down here in Australia. So they got so many socks returned and recycled, they had enough yarn to actually start making socks that they could release to the broader consumer market globally. And when you think about that, just for socks from the US to be able to create enough yarn to make socks for a global market, that's a pretty impressive feat. Second cut, we should see it here in the second half of this year. And there'll be a few retailers who have signed up for second cut. And look, it's interesting. The sock itself is a little bit more based on the classic hike sock that is available in stores. It has a little bit less technical detail than what we might have in a performance hike sock or a run sock. And it can't be called a wool sock. It can be called a recycled sock because it has new wool, and then it has a certain amount of product that has some wool, but obviously through the recycling process, there is a capture of new wool as well as, you know, other synthetics in there as well.
All right. No, that sounds good. I think that seems to be a pattern over the last few years where companies are trying to look at how they can improve their environmental footprint. And I must admit, socks are one of those sort of things, you know, we're used to recycling bottles and cans and things like that, but, you know, somewhere where you can recycle socks is not a bad idea.
Yeah, 100%. And we're seeing a lot of retailers here in Australia do that. And, you know, it is tricky for our little island nation to be a part of broader global sustainability trends. But, you know, we as a company reached out to a mob in Melbourne called Apparel, and there's quite a lot of us in this outdoor industry that are using them. I know the North Face, and I think Icebreak and a few others are using them as well. And they basically take any damage, say, warranty stock or something like that, that can't be resold back to their facility, and they turn that into other products. So they upcycle that product and recycle that product to become something that has more life, and it keeps it out of landfill. I think that's the major thing. And Smartwool, as a company, have got a goal of 2030 to be 100% climate positive sourced wool and 100% regenerative and recycled and source renewable materials in that period as well. So, you know, they've got some lofty ambitions, and it's cool that we can be a part of that, and both consumers and retailers and every part of this kind of food chain can be a part of making smarter choices.
Okay, that's good. So where to next for Smartwool? What can we expect to see out of the Smartwool range in the coming season, apart from that, the second cut, which is a great idea?
Yeah, I think, I mean, just on that, they'll probably take second cut, maybe to apparel. I mean, who knows? I'll let you know when I see something. But, you know, what they've done now is pretty exciting. Smartwool are always testing, reinventing, you know, applying new technologies to whatever they can. And we're going to see some updates in some everyday socks for some reason. People have a penchant for those really slender little socks that go inside your shoes that nobody can see.
Yeah.
And so there's been a new reinvention of that. And it's taken them, you know, probably 18 months of testing, manufacturing, retesting, just to get the silicon gripper right on those. So, you know, Smart will take everything they do with a lot of focus and a lot of integrity. One thing we're going to start seeing the sort of middle to second half of this year is a new compression sock. And this is quite exciting because while there are compression socks out on the market, there's not much in the way of a wool sock. And in that, there isn't really a wool sock that has compression that isn't so insulatively warm that you could wear it when running. So this is purely a running focused compression wool blended sock. And I mean, the stats on this are pretty amazing. The sample that I've seen has amazing mesh in around the calf, around the top of the foot, like they have with all of their run socks. And it has a quite high amount of compression. They're claiming to be sort of 20 to 30 mmHg. So, you know, the amount of mercury moved in that compression is quite high. And actually above sort of 30 to 36 is considered really high. So they're really quite a strong compression sock. That'll be pretty exciting. So hopefully we can get you some of those and you can have a bit of a trot around in them in the next season or two.
I must admit, I've always been keen on looking at trying the compression socks, because I know on days where I'm doing some really big distances, the lower legs really are sore. So I'd be interested to see if they have an impact on that, or at least minimizing that soreness.
Yeah, I mean, I've worn compression undergarments when I've done multi-day motorbike and cycling events, and, you know, it does make a difference and it does help you recover. And in fact, I kind of was walking up Threadbow and back down for a downhill race week before, and gosh, I wish I had some compression socks, because my legs were sore for days afterwards. So, yeah, I'll be really interested to test them out as well. We're going to have quite a few pairs. We've got some retailers on board, and then we'll have some available on the website as well.
No, that sounds great.
One of the big things for us launching this year, and it's been in the works for quite a while, we should see it happen, you know, any day now, is the launch of smartwool.com.au. So, you know, we know retailers buy a certain sock and that's what's available. And then, you know, occasionally you might have a consumer who jumps online and sees all the socks that are available in the US. Well, hopefully we can bring all of those odds and sods and unique socks down here and make them available. We'll also have a smattering of apparel. We have some already in stock. We're just waiting for that green light to turn on so we can start launching it out there to the market. And I think consumers need not be afraid. We'll make sure that it gets into everyone's faces and they know that there's a smartwool.com.au website out there.
All right, that's great. It's always, as you say, it's always good. It's one thing looking at the worldwide website, but yeah, you know, you know that all these things don't go into every country, and you think, oh, I wouldn't mind trying those, but it just becomes a bit hard. So it's good to see that Australia will have its own smart wool dedicated website.
Yeah, 100%. And look, you know, I guess the important thing to say, you know, being the distributor, we don't want to take anything away from our retailers, and our retailers support the brand and do so many good things with it. And, you know, without them, Smartwool wouldn't exist in Australia. So, yeah, we can't have all of our chickens and eggs all in the basket. So there'll definitely be more things available in some retailers than maybe what we have on the site. So, you know, you can't. You've got to look around, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Now, I believe you're also the brand manager for Cool. Tell us a bit about Cool. I'm a Cool fan, but I think a lot of people won't know the name. So what is Cool and what are they known for?
Okay, so Cool are an apparel company based out of Salt Lake City in Utah. They're an independently owned company, and they've had that same owner since their inauguration back in, I'm going to say, the 80s. They started off, you know, a couple of ski bums, not unlike Smartwool, started off with a good idea, making this funky little fleece hat. They did really well at selling that to the US market. Then they produced their next product and their next product, and so Cool was born. And it is a range of apparel that has mountain culture at its heart. It's technical, you know, and some of those pieces like Smartwool products are totally over-engineered, totally designed beyond what somebody could possibly do. And then they do a whole range of everyday mountain apparel at the same time. Now, Australia is a unique market, and it's always funny having conversations with the folks at Cool in Utah because, you know, 20 minutes out of Salt Lake City, you've got amazing ski fields. You know, you go the other way, you've got canyons and messes, and you know, it's a outdoor enthusiast playground. Whereas here, Australia very much is based on surf culture and beach culture. So having a mountain culture brand, it's been a challenge to find its roots here, and we've done well with some products, where some products just haven't been able to get a leg up when you start competing against some of those surf brands out there in the marketplace. Sorry, one second. Right. So, Cool. Probably best known for their pants, and that's definitely where they have a foothold in the best-selling pants in that outdoor category in the US. Beyond all those other brands, Patagonia's, all of those things, the Cool Rider, the Cool Radical are the pants that just dominate the marketplace, and as a result, you know, they build everything kind of off of that. So you said you have a pair of Radical pants?
Yeah, I've got Radical. My wife, I can't remember which model my wife has, but she also wears they're almost like a three-quarter pants, and she's uh-huh. She's a big fan of the Cool brand as well. So
yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing I like about Cool that speaks to me as somebody who likes the outdoors, I got to that point in my life where I'd kind of had enough of wearing fleece and down jackets and, you know, highly synthetic pants that looked like I was a pro athlete, because I'm really not. I'm just a regular fella. So having Cool there means that I can get a pant that's designed for things that I do in the outdoors without being overly technical. It's an everyday pant. You know, I can go hiking in it. I can do day hikes. I can drive and go forward driving. I can go visiting people. I can go to a restaurant at night, and you know, I don't look like a total hillbilly. So I really like the brand for that and what they stand for. I think, you know, to own a cool product, you have an insight into how over-engineered they are. And, you know, Kevin, who's the owner of Cool, you know, to describe passion would be to have a picture of Kevin. You know, he's so passionate about the brand and what it does and all the people that are a part of the brand story. It's always such a great buzz to go and catch up with Kevin once a year.
I must admit, you know, I've been wearing the Radical pants for a few years now, and I must admit I tend to overwear them, so that some of mine are looking pretty faded and old, but they're still performing really well, and I just love the features that they've got on them. So it's good to see that they're keeping on going, and I suppose I must admit from a personal thing, I'd love to see some really bright Larry colours, but I know that they're not necessarily the things that most Australians buy.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, Cool is the epitome of not bright colours. you know, if there was a company that did more browns, I haven't met them yet. Browns and greys are really their thing, and they talk about being understated. You know, besides being understated in terms of their look, if you have a look at Cool garments, there's no big branding across any of it. You know, on a lot of their jackets and shirts, you might see one small shield on a sleeve, and that's the extent of it. And while that might not be a big thing when it comes to marketing 101, it comes to be a big thing when it comes to reputation and actually backing your product from behind it and not needing to call it out over the grandstand for something that it isn't. So for me, that's a really big thing about Cool.
Okay, so we've been talking with Adrian from Outdoor Agencies about smart wool socks in particular and just touching briefly on Cool. Thanks very much for taking the time to chat with us.
Oh, Tim, it's great as always, and I'm sure we'll be talking again about some more great products pretty soon, and stand by for some fancy compression socks coming in the mail.
So that was our catch-up with Adrian, the brand manager for Smart Wool and Cool from Outdoor Agencies. Certainly with Smart Wool, it is a sock that I do like, and it now has become my sock of choice over the last 12 months. I have tried so many socks on the market, and there are certainly my favourites and things that have been my mainstay for the last few years, which are still very good socks, but I like very particular features in a sock, and Smart Wool just happens to put all those combinations together and produce what I want. So I'm looking forward to trying the compression socks and seeing if they impact my tiredness on my legs after a long day of hiking. And I think, you know, the whole issue of this is smart wool, it's a wool sock as a base, but also incorporates synthetic, like most other wool manufacturers do as well. The synthetic is what gives it the tension and the ability to bounce back. 100% wool socks, when they get sopping wet, tend to turn into a bit of a bag, and they don't sort of retain their shape until they're dry again. But certainly the way the compression is set up in these socks, it just holds them in place and is really comfortable to use. And it is good to see that there will be smartwool.com.au at some stage later this year, so keep an eye out for that. At the time of this podcast going out, it hadn't gone live, but certainly later in the year is the expectation. The other brand we talked about with Adrian was Cool, and these, again, are my pants of choice of both Jill and I. I do like Larry bright, loud pants. There's no doubt about it. And those that have looked at my trail write-ups for Larapinta and Overland Track, you know, in 2016 and 2017 would certainly notice that I was wearing some really bright clothing, to the point of people would recognize me by what I was wearing. It was really obvious. But Cool tends to take the opposite direction. They take a bit more understated. Browns, blacks, greys, all the natural and earthy sort of tones that aren't going to offend anybody. No really loud logos. I mean, there are logos on their clothing, obviously, but they don't stand out as being the dominant feature. I think Cool clothing just speaks for itself as far as the quality and the features they have in there. They just are quite an amazing set of pants in particular is what I know them for. And again, I've been wearing Cool pants for a number of years now and do love them. So looking forward to catching up with Adrian at some later stage to talk more in depth about Cool. But yeah, certainly if you haven't already done so, or if you're not doing so at the moment, have a look on the show notes for the images of the product we were talking about. And you know, we certainly have done reviews of both Cool and Smart Wool on the website as well. Okay, so next up, we're talking to Zenon Hextall from Outdoor Agencies about the Nemo range. So Zenon, thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
My pleasure, Tim.
Okay, now Nemo is a range that I both use and have heard of, and I think a lot of people have heard of over the years. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is the new range of camp chairs from Nemo. And there's one in particular you thought was worthwhile having a chat about that really is keen for hikers. So, and that was the Moonlight. So tell us a bit more about that one.
So first of all, Nemo released their first backpacking chair in the Moonlight in 2023. And 2024 is going to see a new member to that Moonlight family in the Moonlight Elite. So the Moonlight Elite is basically a super lightweight version of the existing Moonlight chair. So it's going to weigh in at 617 grams, that's packed weight, and it utilizes a really cool tensioning system. So something that corresponds with all Nemo chairs, whether it's their camping chairs like their Stargaze or the Moonlight range, is that they all recline. And so the Moonlight Elite is using a reclining system that's inspired by a belay device that climbers would use. So it's basically if you angle it and it will release, and so you can lean backwards, but as soon as you take your hands off the buckles, it'll automatically lock back into place. So, and it uses a cordlet rather than a strapping that runs through the tensioning system as well.
Okay, I mean, I'm looking at the images here, which we'll put up on the show notes for people to have a look at. They look like they come in two colours. So we've got citron and goodnight grey, which I suppose is a good way of saying yellow and black. they're quite nice looking little chairs. And they've got a weight capacity of, looks like, about 113 kilos. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. So, they'll take a fairly burly bushwalker.
Okay, well, I'll be interesting to test that out. I'm probably about 106 at the moment, so we'll see how that one works.
Look, you know, it's, if you were a little bit over the 113, you know, maybe you'd be okay. I think they're pretty solid. I certainly feel pretty secure, and I'm sitting on one. And one other thing that kind of sets this chair apart from similar products in the market is it's got a platform that is also that doubles as a carrying case. So the platform attaches into the feet of the chair, and it allows the chair to be used on soft surfaces like on the sand, for example.
No, I think that's often the thing, isn't it? If you've got a solid floor or a concrete patio or something like that, it's not a problem. But you know, when you've got soft, wet ground or ground that's not so stable, having that little platform, if you like, that allows it not to sink into the ground is probably quite needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Those little if you've got a 100-kilo person sitting on those little chair legs, they can act like tent pegs in a way, and you can find yourself sinking into the ground quite easily.
Now, I noticed as well that some of the other range, things like the standard Moonlight, it'll cope with much heavier hikers, and I think it's from what I'm looking at here is about 136 kilos. So if you are pushing the limits and pushing the friendship with your weight, you may be better off going for a slightly a sturdier chair rather than the really lightweight ones, which will probably suit most hikers.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Yeah, and I mean, even the regular Moonlight chair is still pretty decent. You're looking at about 850 grams minimum weight. So that's basically the chair without the little stuff sack.
No, that's great. That's great. From there, we move on to the new or newish Mayfly Osmo tent. Now, Osmo tents or Nemo Osmo tents have been around for a couple of years now, but what is Osmo as opposed to what Nemo used to have? What's the difference there?
So, good question. A little bit of tent history. Back in the good old days, you might remember, Tim, I certainly do, most high-end backpacking tents would have a polyester fly. And a couple of the advantages of polyester is that it's highly UV resistant. And it's also quite a static fabric in that it doesn't have a whole lot of stretch to it. The downside is that it's comparatively quite heavy. Enter Sil nylon fabrics, you know, maybe 20, 30 years ago, and we saw a huge weight reduction in tents, and also the Sil nylon was able to match UV, match polyester in terms of UV resistance. One of the downsides about Sil nylon is that it gets quite saggy when it's wet. So Osmo came about by Nemo as it was basically a technical program for them. They wanted to create a super technical tent fabric. So what they did is they created a composite of using polyester yarns interwoven with nylon fabric. So you end up with this grid configuration. You can see the polyester grid with the nylon fabric interspersed throughout. And what it basically does is that you end up with a fabric that three times less stretch when it's wet, roughly 20% stronger than the old Sil nylon version of Nemo's fabrics. It's got four times longer lasting water repellency. And then from a sustainability perspective, you're looking at a fabric that's made 100% from post-consumer recycled materials. And it's also free from PFAS and FRCs. So it's quite a revolutionary fabric. It's had a lot of success with Nemo's existing tents. And so they wanted to unroll Osmo into a tent that had a more price-pointed focus. So enter the Mayfly Thor for 2024, and it's going to be available in both a 2P and a 3P.
Now, what is different about the Mayfly compared to the other models of tent? Why bring out a new tent, and what's so special about the Mayfly?
Look, Nemo's other tents, say Hornet and Dagger, they are utilising poles and other pieces of equipment that are made from external manufacturers, so DAC poles, for example, which are, you know, probably highly regarded as often regarded as the best poles on the market. So Mayfly is, like I said, they're trying to keep the price down a little bit, so it's using Nemo's proprietary hardware. So we've got their Elements materials, such as the hub hubs, anchor points, and poles. And not only does that trim back a little bit on weight, but it's also keeping the price down on this particular tent. So, you know, Dagger, for example, fabulous tent, but it's pushing $1,000 these days. And in the current market, a lot of people struggle to fork out that sort of cash for a two-person tent. So the Mayfly Osmo 2P, by comparison, is going to be a $700 tent in the Australian market. So you've got these fabulous technical fabrics in the Osmo and also the Nemo Elements hardware, but at a price point that a lot of consumers will find more agreeable.
Yeah, no. And now in relation to the two-person tent, what are we looking at weight-wise?
So the two-person tent, minimum weight, which is, you know, a bit of a funny weight because it doesn't include pegs. And you do need pegs to pitch this tent, but minimum weight, you're looking at 1.37 kilos. And the three-person tent, you're looking at 1.63 kilos. So it comes in, you know, packed weight, you're looking at about 1.5 and around about 1.7 for the 3P.
Well, that's still a fairly lightweight tent. I think anything under 2 kilos with everything you need is still a pretty good weight. Looking at the images here, it looks like it's a good size. You can comfortably sit up inside this, and it looks like there's a reasonable amount of space. So I think for the price it is, it'll be a very popular tent once it does actually hit the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think for people who are after a more spacious two-person version, I think we're going to sell a lot of 3P tents to people who are seeking a roomier two-person alternative.
Yeah, and given you're only talking about a matter of a few hundred grams between the two and three person, as you say, for the sake of, you know, saying, well, okay, I'm carrying a few hundred extra grams, but I've now got a bit of luxury space-wise in the tent.
That's right, yep.
Any other special features or any other differences that that people are going to need to be aware of? I noticed we're still using the greeny colour-looking material, is that right?
Yeah, so the greeny is kind of Nemo's. They like the colour green. It's in their logo, and they definitely see their, you know, use green a lot of their products, and it continues in a slightly paler version, might we say, for the Mayfly. The only other thing I'd probably add is there is obviously a footprint available both for the 2P and the 3P, and the weights don't factor in that footprint, nor do the price. It is purchasable separately, but I would highly recommend using a footprint with this or any tent whether it be Nemo or any brand, any tent that where a footprint is available, I think it's pretty much mandatory these days.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And it's you know, if you're just camping on grass and that's it and you're not going anywhere else, you're probably fine. But as soon as you, you know, take it on the Larapinta Trail, I think definitely you need a footprint for something like that.
For sure, yep.
Right, now, from there, we move on to a range of Nemo sleeping bags. Now, this is a range I'm not really familiar with, so tell us about the Nemo sleeping bags.
Yeah, sure. So there's a lot of sleeping bag brands out in the market, and they all kind of do the same thing. So Nemo, with its sleeping bag range, kind of wanted to do things a bit differently. So they have a couple of what they call spoon-shaped bags in their range. Here we're talking about the Disco and the Riff that are going to be new for 2024. And they're a great sleeping bag for anybody who doesn't particularly like the confined feeling of a more traditional mummy-style bag in Australia, or a tapered rectangular bag. So it's almost like shaped a bit like the number 8. It's a little bit roomier across the shoulders, and then it's a little bit roomier across the knee area too. So it's really awesome for side sleepers, particularly, like I said, if they're claustrophobes or just want to have a little bit more comfort in the way they're sleeping. So the Disco and the Riff are essentially the same bag. The only difference between the two is the down. So the Disco is a slightly cheaper bag. It uses a 650 loft fuel power down, whereas the Riff is slightly higher end, uses an 800 fuel power down.
And by the look of it, it's also a slightly lighter weight bag as well, using that higher quality down.
Yeah, that's right. So, for example, the Disco, a limit of -9 is about 1.34 kilos, whereas the equivalent bag using in the Riff is about 1.12 kilos. So you're saving 200 grams.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I must admit, it's cosmetic only, but I must admit I do like the look of the Riff bags more, and it's I can't say why.
I know, they do look a bit more bougie, don't they? They're a bit shinier, they look a bit prettier. Yeah, I agree.
Now, looking at these bags, it looks like they've got arm zips. Is that the case? Or is that more a patterning thing on the bags?
So that's another thing that Nemo does differently, is that they use a proprietary thermoregulation system called Thermogills. So I don't know why anybody else didn't really think of this a long time ago, but basically it's, in this case, it's two parallel zips that go run down the chest to around about the waist area of the bag, and they assist regulating the temperature inside the bag without exposing your body to the cold at the outside.
Okay. Yeah, I must admit. And the what about the, without actually being able to have a look at it through here, is this a full zip or a three-quarter zip or a half zip on these bags?
These are a three-quarter zip. So it kind of goes down to about the foot box. Yep. It doesn't go right round though.
No, that's fine. So having that ability to get a bit more movement of air, particularly on warmer days, makes them probably a bit more of a versatile bag.
That's right, yeah. There are, you know, because of the shape, they are slightly heavier than a mummy equivalent bag. But for those who are after a little bit of extra comfort, yeah, I think it's probably a small price to pay in the overall scheme of things. But it also, like you said, makes them a versatile bag. I use it for if I'm going on a hike, I'll pack one. But also it's awesome if I'm just camping out of the car or whatever.
Now, are these available now or they're coming onto the market soon?
So these are also going to be launching in 2024. So these should be launching around about April at this stage.
Yeah, so we're not too far off it then.
That's right, yep.
Is there a male and female version in both these bags?
There is, yep, that's right. So the female version, just slightly different geometry, a little bit shorter, a little bit roomier in certain parts. Also has a bit more down in it as well, because women biologically tend to be cooler sleepers than what most guys are.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. And I must admit, the colour range looks quite reasonable as well. I mean, you're not just getting one colour choice. You've got a couple of choices in the men's and the women's bags. So, you know, if fashion is a consideration, at least you do have that choice.
It's importantly to look your best, even when you're sleeping. Yeah.
They're both very similar in design, but in particular, the Riff bags almost look a bit like a cocoon.
They do. It's probably just the higher fuel power of the down. Just, yeah, really puffs them out a lot more, and they do look quite cocoon-like, don't they?
Yeah, no, they do. They do. Okay, from there, we're going to look at the Tensor sleeping mats. And this is a mat that I've been aware of for a number of years, but never had a chance to sort of test out. What's so wonderful about Tensor sleeping mats from Nemo?
Probably the thing that has always set the Tensor apart from comparable mats from other brands on the market would be its suppleness. Not to say it's a silent mat to sleep on, but it's certainly a lot quieter, I think, than most other brands on the market that are of, you know, of an equivalent quality.
Looking at the Tensor range in the catalogs through here, they seem to be more a rectangular shape, or is there also the mummy style shapes available as well?
No, they offer them in a bunch of different lengths and widths in a rectangular shape. And then there is a regular mummy shape available in every style as well.
And I'm guessing the mummy shape bags are probably a bit lighter and less room as well, but also a bit lighter and probably packed down a bit smaller, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's right. So just to kind of like outline that. So you're looking at 400 grams for a Tensor all-season mummy, and then 420 grams for the same length, but in a regular, so the rectangular version. So yeah, right. little slightly less weight, slightly less bulk on the mummy version.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And I think, you know, particularly from a hiking perspective, if you're trying to travel fast and light, getting small and compact, as long as you're not, you know, if you're a bigger person, you might appreciate the rectangular bags, or if you're camping. But for a lot of hikers, what I've seen certainly being used on trail tends to be the mummy sort of size or style of mats.
Yeah, that's right. And another thing to factor in here is, you know, with a lot of tents will have like a tapered floor, in that, you know, it'll be a little bit roomier at the head end and a little bit narrower at the foot end. And so a mummy mat will fit into that space much better than a rectangular shaped sleeping mat.
All right. Now, as far as the valve's concerned, I'm looking here at the Tensor Extreme, which we'll talk about in a moment. Is it the same valve that's used on all the sleeping mats, or does it vary between mat to mat?
No. So the 2024 mats are going to use a new Lalo valve. It's across all the three different Tensor sleeping mats that will be available.
And are they all going to come with a pump sack to blow them up, or is it more just in some of the range?
No, that's right. They all do come with the Vortex pump sack as well. So it clips in. It's pretty easy to use. And yeah, it pumps your mat up in a matter of probably, you know, 30 seconds or so. It'll be inflated.
And it looks like it's also got a two-part system on the valve, which when you want to empty it at the end of the day, you open it up, and I'm guessing it'll empty of air pretty quickly.
That's right. So yeah, there's an adjustment. The first plug pulls out, and there's an adjuster, so you can release air or put more air back in. And then it's got a dump valve, so pull out that second one, and away you go. I guess the trick is when you're asleep or if it's dark, and if you feel that you've inflated your mat a little bit too much. You just got to make sure you don't pull the dump valve in the middle of the night. You pull out the first valve and micro adjust. We've probably all been there where we've inadvertently pulled the dump valve at, you know, in the wee hours of the morning, only have to fill it back up again.
Yeah. And I know with most of these sort of mats, sometimes I almost feel like I pass out when I'm trying to inflate these things. And I actually got in trouble on a hike recently where I left the inflation bag at home because I thought it was extra weight, but my wife is the one that blows up the sleeping mat, so she complained about that.
That could have been a stressful moment for you, mate.
Now let's go through and talk about the Nemo range specifically. So the Extreme, is that a new mat, or is that one that's been out for a while?
So basically the Tensor Extreme will replace the old Tensor Alpine. As the name suggests, it's designed for extreme cold situations. So, you know, polar expeditions, high altitude climbing expeditions, that sort of thing. Or even, you know, at home here in the depths of winter on a ski touring trip or something to that equivalent. I guess the thing that makes it really pop out in comparison to maybe other mats in the market is its warmth to weight ratio as well. So it comes in at 445 grams. That's for the mummy version. But it's got an absolutely massive 8.5 R value, which is pretty substantial.
No, that's pretty good. And I think this is the issue that a lot of people have when they go either camping or hiking, is they'll spend all their money on a sleeping bag and then get the cheapest sleeping mat they can find, and they pay the price. You've really got to match, you know, the mat to the bag depending on the conditions that you're going to be camping or hiking in on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, anybody who does a lot of hiking will probably own one, like two or maybe more sleeping bags, because obviously you need different sleeping bags for different conditions. And the same can probably be said for sleeping mats as well. Yeah, you definitely, anybody who's gone super lightweight and when camping on snow, and I can attest to this because I've made the mistake on a few occasions, if your sleeping pad's not up to the task, it makes for a really miserable experience.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, you end up, you know, if you're using a sleeping bag and you're flattening all the down underneath you, you've got to have that insulation underneath you to keep you warm.
Yeah, it's vital.
Moving down the range, so we've obviously got the Tensor Extreme, which is the top of the line sleeping mat. What other mats are in the Tensor range, and why do we have them?
The next one is the Tensor All Season, which basically replaces what they used to call the Tensor Insulated. So it's still an insulated sleeping mat, but it's not as insulated as the Extreme. So it still has an impressive R value of 5.4, and it comes in at 400 grams. That's for the mummy version, but it's not going to keep you as not really designed for the extreme use as the Extreme version is. It's probably, this is going to be the bread and butter sleeping pad for most Australians, I think. And it includes, you know, it's a four season mat, so using it year round at 5.4, it's going to be pretty good on snow or ice. Depending on how you sleep, you might want to have a little bit of extra insulation underneath you, but you shouldn't be too uncomfortable with that sort of insulation in that sort of situation.
No, as you say, for most hikers who you know aren't necessarily snow campers, this will probably do them for the majority of what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the Tensor Trail is basically an uninsulated version, so it's a little bit lighter. So coming in at 355 grams for the mummy. And also slightly less bulky, and then it's also the cheapest of the Tensor range.
Okay. Now, whenever I've seen Tensor sleeping mats in the past, it always seems to be that yellow mummy-shaped mat. Is that what I'm likely to have seen, or has the colours now changed or varied?
Yeah, that's right. So they've kind of and it was always a little bit confusing because all the sleeping mats looked pretty similar. They were similar colours. So they've made the whole range a bit more legible. So they've got a darker colour for the Extreme, and then the Tensor All Season is going to be a grey, and then the Tensor Trail will be a yellow sleeping mat. So you can clearly identify which mat is which.
Yeah, no, that's good. One of the things that that Nemo is doing is pushing onto the sustainability side of things, and they always have done, but there seems to be more of a focus on this. So what is Nemo doing in relation to sustainability in their product?
Yeah, okay. Look, actually going back to when Nemo was founded, the founder and owner of Nemo, Cam, said to himself, well, this is a difficult thing to do. I don't really want to be, there's a lot of product in the market, and I don't want to be bringing another brand to market that just kind of does the same stuff, and essentially putting more stuff into the marketplace that then has to be disposed of some way when it comes to the end of its life. So an ethos of Nemo has always been to create product that actually makes a difference. With that ethos in mind, Nemo have developed their Endless Promise commitment, which they're unrolling across a few of their products at the moment. So, for example, the Disco and the Riff sleeping bags have their Endless Promise commitment. And what that basically is a promise that it will be, it's offering circularity into the marketplace. So they're made from 100% post-consumer recycled materials, And more importantly, when the product reaches the end of its life, it can then be recycled and or repurposed. So the downs can be repurposed and all the materials can be recycled. And you know, that's even incorporates methods of construction so that things can actually be pulled apart at the end of their life. Now, at the moment, Nemo, they've only just started unrolling Endless Promise across a few styles in 2023. But each season, we're going to see that extend across the range. And ultimately, they want to offer Endless Promise across the entire Nemo collection. So that is using recycled materials and then making sure everything is made that, so that it can be recycled and or repurposed at the end of its lifespan.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good thing. Yeah, I think I'll be honest. I think the new innovations that are coming onto the market, I think, have slowed down. I think there've been so many that have come on the market in the last few years, and they're all still working really well. But I think that the big thing is how can you make products more environmentally friendly, less impact, and able to be reused rather than just filling up some landfill somewhere, either in Australia or overseas. So I think it's a good way that the industry is heading, and I think Nemo seems to be concerned about that, which is always good to see in their product.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was just a couple of weeks ago, actually, a couple of the Nemo crew came out because whilst Endless Promise is they've teed up with a bunch of partners to facilitate the end of life processing of their products in North America and Europe. They're committed to unrolling it right across all of their markets. So, yeah, like I said, the Nemo crew were out a couple of weeks ago, and we spent a couple of very busy days flying around Australia talking to prospective partners for basically, what are we going to do when these products reach the end of their life, and how are we going to process them here in Australia, and what opportunities exist within our market. So it was a really amazing few days to hang out with Nemo and see what they're looking for and to see what's happening in the Australian marketplace.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think it's as I said, it really is good to see the industry heading this way. You know, I think a lot of industries worldwide seem to be heading down this path, but it's good from a hiking perspective. It's like, what do you do with this stuff at the end of its life, and can it be recycled? And that's always good to know. Or are you buying material that has been recycled already? So it's quite handy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we've been talking with Zenon Hextall from Outdoor Agencies on the Nemo product range. There's certainly some good stuff coming to the market in the coming months, and it's going to be good to see and test those out when we get the opportunity. So thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
My pleasure, Tim. Thanks for having me on board.
So that was our interview with Zenon from Outdoor Agencies, who manages the Nemo range of products. And this is it's an odd range for me. I have been a fan of Nemo for a while. And in fact, my solo hiking tent has been a Nemo tent since 2018. But I've never had the opportunity or the chance to actually have a good look at the range and a good talk about the range. And hopefully over the next couple of months, I'll be getting a chance to do some testing out to see what else is available. The product range is quite large, and I think it's like a lot of products that there's a huge range in Europe and the US, and we only seem to get a smaller range here in Australia, but it appears that they're trying to remedy that and trying to get a much larger range into the stores. So it's good to see, because they do have some good products. So we had a good coverage of a range of product, which we basically cherry-picked across the range. So the new range of lightweight outdoor furniture, and they'd always had chairs in the past, but they've gone through and making them lighter and lighter and making them more accessible to hikers as opposed to just campers. The range of sleeping bags, again, is another range which is, there's so many sleeping bag models and varieties and brands on the market. It's always good to see brands that differentiate. And as I said, when you look at these, the ones in particular that we talked about, they pretty much look like cocoons. And that's just the best way to describe them, just the shape and almost the appearance of them. That's what it reminds me of. But they've got some little unique features that I think do differentiate them from other product in the market. And I think that'll make them quite popular. We then talked about the Mayfly Osmo, which is one of their newer tents in the range. And again, it is price pointed. It isn't cheap. You know, when you're talking about roughly $700 for a tent, it's getting up there. But when their top-end hiking style tents are around $1,000, it makes it a bit more accessible to more people, and in addition provides a larger space. So this is not a tiny two-man tent. It's a two-man tent, or a three-man for that matter, that has the ability to have a bit of space in there as well. So I think they will do well on the market. You know, and again, the two-man and three-man, I think, were roughly around about 1.5 and 1.7, 1.8 kilos in weight, which is still classed as lightweight as far as tents are concerned. So again, it's going to be good to see how they go on the market, but I think they'll do well. We then went on to talk about the new upgraded Tensor range of sleeping mats. Now, Nemo Tensor has been one of those sleeping mats that's been around for quite a few years. I haven't had a chance to test it out, which we hope to remedy in the coming months. And I think, again, all the brands of sleeping mats have their points of difference. So again, they've got a range of really, you know, the extreme, which is the really cold weather one. They've got the mid-range one, which I said is going to suit just about everybody on the market at an R value of approximately 5.4. And then the uninsulated model, which would be ideal for people that are looking at a sleeping mat for hiking in the warmer weather. So I think we'll start to see more of the Nemo range push into the market in more and more stores. And finally, we talked about Nemo's sustainability push. And again, like a lot of other companies, they're doing the right thing. They're using recycled products. They're making their products in a way that they can be stripped down and recycled at the end of their life. And again, it's good to see these companies doing the right thing from the environment perspective, because otherwise it just ends up in landfill and just creates an environmental mess at the end of it. So good on Nemo for pushing on that. So I'm up here in Sydney at the exhibition that Cedar Summit's putting on for all their brands, and a new brand for them this year is Off Grid, and I've got James here, who is the founder and also the chief chef, I believe, for Off Grid as well. So James, tell us a bit about Off Grid.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. We're very new to the market, and we're an Australian company that make provisions, a wide range of provisions for a wide range of adventures, whether it be hiking or pack hunting or fishing or boating or whatever your chosen adventure is, we make it for that. We're fresh food. We're not freeze-dried or dehydrated. We're wet food, but we're 100% natural. We're 100% gluten-free. We're 100% dairy-free. And, you know, one of the biggest focuses for us is traceability. I really believe in supporting local farmers and growers, and a lot of our recipes do that to the fullest extent. One of the biggest things is that we like to focus on is over 70% of the ingredients that we use are wholly Australian.
All right. Now, what are the key ranges that you've got for the release?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to talk about would be certain things like the wet food, but not butter chicken, potatoes and saltbush. You know, the potatoes come from the Gippsland region. The not butter chicken is called not butter chicken because we don't put any butter in it. It's got coconut, so we're pretty blunt in our advertising, a good Aussie way. And then I'm doing go packs, so we can do tailored packs, but we're also doing store packs where people can just pick up a 12 to 24 hour sort of hike pack or adventure pack. And it's got hydrates, it's got all the things you sort of need just to get away for, you know, a quick overnighter. Everyone's time poor now, and we just think that's a really important little thing.
All right, now you've got also things called fire sticks, which I have tasted, so tell us about those.
Yeah, so the fire sticks are all natural as well, gluten-free, dairy-free. They're made of pork. They're roughly about 42 grams of protein per serve, so really high in protein. And we do a natural, which is not too spicy, and we do a spicy that's very bloody spicy. So, yeah.
Now I must admit I've tried these, and as a spice lover, I'll disagree with you there. I'd say the spice lover isn't overly spicy, but for a lot of people it probably will be. But for me, I love it. And one of the things I found with this type of product is, the things you get out of the supermarkets, they're nice and convenient and they're nice little single serves, but they don't taste particularly good. Whereas these ones are really nice.
Oh, thank you, Tim. I appreciate it. And, you know, we put a lot of heart and soul into it. And I just think, you know, going forward, adventure food doesn't need to be food that you have to eat. It should be food you want to eat.
No, that's true. And I must admit, life's too short to eat bad food. Now, one of the things I like about the Fire Sticks as well, it comes in a packet, and the packet lasts for 2 days once you've opened it. And the conversation we're having before this interview was, good luck making it last 2 days. But yeah, that's always the thing. As soon as you open packets, you've got basically a meat product that's going to not last for a week or so. But as I said, I don't think you're going to leave it sitting there for a week. It'll go in a couple of days, particularly if you've got a couple. So I think they'll do well.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tim. And we're very young. We're enjoying the industry, and meeting some wonderful people. So yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for taking the time to talk with us, James. And we'll actually go through and put some images and some links up so you can see the specific product. Not all available in the shops just yet, but not far away. Yeah. So looking forward to seeing it come onto the market.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tim. Really appreciate it.
So that was our very short interview with James from Ausgrid. Now, it's an interesting product range. As James said, this is not a freeze-dried or a dehydrated range. It's a fresh food range. So, you know, weight-wise, you know, when you're looking at a lot of hiking meals range between sort of roughly the 100 to sort of 150, 180 grams for up to the two-person servings. These really are basically a cooked meal that's basically been sealed away, and you just essentially heat it up in the water to eat them. But it is fresh food. So we had a chance to try one of the curries, and it was quite nice. So I will be doing some reviews of these in the coming weeks and months. And I think it's one of those sort of things where, is it for hiking or is it for camping? Definitely from a camping perspective, I think they'll do really well. From a hiking perspective, for a day, maybe 2 days, I don't know if I'd want to be carrying 10 days worth of food at 250 grams. That would certainly add up weight-wise overall. But it'd be good to throw one in a mix just for a bit of variety. But it is good to see companies coming online that aren't trying to copy what's already in existence, but to create something new and create something that's a point of difference. So look forward to seeing these in more and more stores over the coming months. And in this next section, which we've called Things to Keep an Eye Out For, we managed to see a lot of gear and talk to wholesalers, but we didn't get an opportunity to interview. So we're going to talk a bit about things that we thought were exciting and are worthwhile keeping an eye out for that haven't hit the market quite yet at the time of the release of this episode, but aren't too far away. Now, the first one is the Cedar Summit range of sleeping bags. And Cedar Summit has gone through and updated cosmetically their sleeping bags, and they've added a few new features across the range as well. But probably one of the things that sort of excite me in some respect, and it's pretty basic, I suppose, is they've renamed their range. So there still is a Spark sleeping bag, but instead of being the Spark 1, 2, or 3, it's now, in this case here, there's an image on the website, the Spark 7 degree bag, which is also the Spark 45 degrees Fahrenheit bag. Now, what that means is if you're looking across the Cedar Summit range, trying to compare sleeping bags and work out what's similar and what you want to go for, you can look at a sleeping bag and say, well, okay, here's a 7 degrees Celsius bag, and the Spark is a men's bag. And you can look at the Ascent range as an example and find a similar range or a similar temperature that matches. Because just because it was a Ascent 2 or a Spark 2 didn't mean they had the same warmth. It just means that's where they sat within their range. So fairly simple, fairly easy, but makes a lot of common sense.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of something that everybody struggled with at some point, trying to work out which is the right sort of bag for you. And I always go on temperature, you know, what's going to keep me warm at whatever temperature, rather than, you know, how they sit in a manufacturer's range.
And I think the other thing, Cedar Summit do sell their sleeping bags worldwide. So having a bag that had Celsius and Fahrenheit on it made a lot of sense rather than putting different labels on different bags just depending on where you were selling it. The big thing with the sleeping bag range that really excited me is the new Spark Pro sleeping bag. Now, it's an attractive looking bag. It's a silver and bluey sort of colour. But the thing that I really like, it's got 950 plus fill power goose down in it. And what this means, and goose down is really the high quality down, and this means that you can get a warm sleeping bag that doesn't weigh a lot, that compresses down to quite a small little package when it's put in its little compression stuff sack for traveling.
Yeah, and it when you see it unstuffed, it looks like a really warm bag, like it's very cozy looking. Can I say that?
And apparently they will have two within the range, a very warm and toasty bag and a not so warm bag. But yeah, certainly if I was buying a sleeping bag at this point in time and I was after a bag that was compact and really plush, I suppose, with lots of features on it, this would be the one I'd be looking for. Cedar Summit also has in their cookware range what's called the Frontier Collapsible One Pot Cook Set. Now, this is a nesting set of utensils, and basically it's got one pot, as it says, and it's got a couple of bowls to put your food into, and then a couple of cups as well. So if you're traveling either as a hiker that likes to cook on the trail or as a camper, these collapsible cooking utensils will pack down to quite a small little unit and allow you quite a bit of versatility. So I think probably more so for campers than hikers, but I do know that hikers that like to cook on trail, and yeah, that's where you need a saucepan to be able to do everything you need. And if you, we don't use bowls or plates typically, but if you do use bowls or plates and then you've got cups, everything is pretty much there.
And when they say collapsible, they just squish down, which, you know, is a great thing. Doesn't take a lot of space up in your pack.
One thing that I wasn't aware of until a few weeks ago was that Black Diamond are now putting out a lightweight set of packs. They've got a new pack which is called Beta Light, and there's a Beta Light 45, and that's BETA, not Beetle, and a Beta Light 30. And I must admit, for me, if I had the choice of, you know, one pack that was pretty much going to cover me for just about everything I want to go through and do, a 45-litre size pack is quite a good option for me.
It's a good size, isn't it?
I can pretty much fit up to sort of 7 or 8 days' worth of food in that sort of size pack, which is going to pretty much do me for everything that's not snow camping. But they're a nice-looking pack. They really are they're classed really as an ultralight pack. There are lighter packs on the market, but it's got quite a lot of good features on it. And I think it'll do really well in the Australian market when it comes into the country. From there, one of the other things that we came across was the Gruzy sleeping bags. And again, the pronunciation may not be quite right there for those German speakers out there. But this is you think, why do we need more sleeping bags on the market? There are so many. And Gruzy have taken an option to do something a bit different, and their sleeping bags are a combination of down and wool. But I think it's a promising looking bag. I'm not going to say attractive or unattractive. They're a good looking bag. There's no doubt about that. But I think just the features that come in there are going to be something that will do well. And I think you expect to see these on the market more commonly over the next year as they become more available.
Yeah, I think the thing for me, it's this combination of design and technology that make these bags interesting. In terms of design, the fact that the zip runs across the body rather than down, that's a really different kind of feature. But, they've really thought about what it's like to get into and out of a bag, to keep warm in a bag, and have probably rejected some of the age-old things that we're all used to and I think, you know, improved on them.
And in talking to the manufacturer who was there at the outdoor show, Gear Geek is probably the best way to describe him.
He put Tim to shame.
Yeah, very, very passionate about his product and very passionate about producing good products. And they also produce things like down jackets or down/wool jackets, and they've actually called it down wool. So again, I think it's just something a bit different rather than just being more of the same. So
yeah, and it's a nice combination of design and almost engineering in a way.
Rainbird as a company has been around for quite a few years, many, many years, and I do use rain gear, wet weather gear, depending on what I'm doing. It tends to be my around town or my day hiking wet weather gear. And they've always been good, and I think the stowaway Rainbird gear is fairly popular and fairly common. But they've gone through and increased or changed the colour range and the pattern range. So again, if you go to the show notes for this podcast, they've got a fluoro yellow. And again, I'm sure it probably works well for the construction industry that live in fluoro. But then, if you want to be spotted out bush, this is certainly the jacket for you.
Yeah, and I think, they're very well priced. There's a whole range of other different colours that they're introducing and a number of different thicknesses and layering. So, that's going to be definitely one to watch out for. And it, it's a little bit more interesting than the very practical range that they've had for a long time.
In the women's jackets, and they are making some changes structurally to these jackets, but certainly they had some of the brand new women's jackets that are coming onto the market, and they're patterned, and they're sort of, the image I'm looking at here is a flower with a smiley face in the middle of it. And again, it's just something different rather than just having a stock standard colour. If you want to have a bit more of a fashion statement that is also a good wet weather gear, this is a good option for you. So again, they'll be coming onto the market, if not now, certainly over the coming months and become more readily available. So keep an eye out for those. The last couple of products we're going to raise, one has been on the market for quite a while and the other is a bit on the newer side. The first is the Climate range of sleeping mats, sleeping pads. This has been a product that's been on the market for quite a few years, but again, it's for whatever reason, we just haven't had a chance to test it out and try it out. And this is something we hope to remedy in the coming months. They do something different, like a lot of the other companies. They all have their own benefits and features that stand out, and you can say, this is a climate mat. So we're looking forward to having a play and having a test out of those. The other product, which was, it's almost unique, I suppose, in the way of outdoor space, and this is the Flextail Ultralight Electric Gear range. Now, you can call them gimmicky if you like, but what they do is they produce a range of tiny little electronics, so lanterns, small little pumps for blowing up sleeping mats. And if you've ever had to blow up a large sleeping mat at the end of the day without passing out, good luck on that one. And these, rather than being large, very cumbersome sort of pumps, they're tiny little pumps and they're tiny little lanterns. So I think it's the sort of thing that they're small enough and light enough that hikers can get away with them, but also aimed at the camping market as well. So again, we'll be testing some of those that range out in the coming months just to see if they're going to be of use to people who want to make their life just that little bit easier. And I suppose this falls into the luxury category. From here, we just want to talk about where is the future of outdoor gear going? And this is something that I am a self-confessed gear geek. I like to know all the ins and outs of gear and how it's marketed and everything else. And the things that have been very obvious to me in the last few years, but more so this year, is there's a few key themes, I suppose, that are becoming very, very obvious. Now, smaller companies are now being consumed by large conglomerates. So ultra running shoes and those people that are into zero drop shoes and have wide feet will know the ultras. They have been purchased by a large conglomerate. In December last year, Topo Athletic Shoes was also purchased by a large conglomerate. And there's a number of other well-known brands that you may not be aware of that have a large company now sitting behind them. And this seems to be a common sort of theme. When you're trying to look at a worldwide market, I think being the little mum and dad sort of venture works well to a point, but eventually you get to the stage, if you want to grow, you've got to start spreading worldwide And that becomes really difficult. And that's where having the big companies behind you is something that that really does help. Certainly from a retailer's perspective, that isn't going to make a lot of difference. But I think what that has meant is these large companies have taken a fairly pragmatic approach to, we can't keep on producing new stock year in, year out. It's an expensive way to do things. And so as a result, many companies are now moving to a two-year upgrade cycle. So I can remember going back to Ultra running shoes again, that in when I first started wearing Ultras, there was the Ultra Lone Peak 2.5 and then 3 and then 3.5. And there wasn't really a lot of difference between them. Now Ultra's moved to Ultra 6, Ultra 7, Ultra 8. It's a two-year release, and 1 year after they release them onto the market, they then tend to release a whole new batch of colours without changing the style or any features on the shoe itself. So I think that's actually quite a good thing. I mean, in my case, I will go through four pairs of trail runners a year, doing roughly 3,000 to 4,000 kilometres in them. And it's the sort of thing that, yeah, sometimes it's like, well, I only just bought this last year. Do I really need a new one? And you almost feel guilted into buying it because you want the latest and greatest. Whereas now it's not so much of an issue. And that is a more environmentally friendly as well. You're not having to get rid of old dyes that, you know, you manufacture these things in. You just have to change the colors, and that's pretty easy. That leads us on to the environmentally sustainability. And now just about every outdoor company is pushing into sustainability in one way or another. So if you'd listened to the earlier part of this podcast where Smart Wool was talking about recycling their socks and producing new socks, it's a really good idea. I mean, how many pairs of socks do people throw out every year? And quite often they end up in landfill rather than being going into the second-hand shops, because usually when you throw them out, they've had it. So in this sort of circumstance, recycling materials, using recycled materials in the manufacturing process, using more nature-friendly chemicals. So PFAS as a chemical is pretty much disappearing off the market for just about all outdoor suppliers. And PFAS is a fairly nasty sort of chemical that tends to live in the environment for quite a while.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. But even, you know, if you're starting from the basics of reduce, then the fact that they're not generating new products every year, or the same product with a different colour, or some, you know, if it's some shoes, some different lacing or whatever, that's actually much more sustainable and a much more environmentally responsible thing to do. So it's funny, while they might not be doing that because the market's not there, there are all of these other benefits because they're not creating unnecessary consumer products. They're updating them and they're improving them when they're needed, rather than creating something new. I think for consumers, we probably need to get our heads into that as well, because we do walk into retail stores and we do look around for the brand new thing that might be a brand new colour or, you know, a slightly different shape. And I think, you know, we're probably going to see a little bit less of that. And that's a good thing, and we need to embrace that, and we need to encourage the wholesalers and the retailers to continue with that theme.
Now, I come from a design background, and yeah, the old adage, cradle to grave for a product lifespan, we were always taught cradle to cradle. So you create something, it goes through a life cycle, you don't just throw it away, you look at what you can repurpose it into. Do you turn it into another piece of clothing or turn it into something totally different, rather than just burying it in the ground and moving on to the next product and the next hole in the ground? So it's good to see that the outdoor industry certainly is playing a big part. And, you know, given the way they're going, it's quite amazing to see where they'll end up in the next sort of 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, and we should acknowledge that there are a lot of companies that have been doing this for a while. And it's not just about what they're using in their materials. It's connecting the life cycle and being able to trace back to make sure that there aren't other implications like modern slavery and so on. So, you know, I think it's a good direction, and again, as consumers, we should support and applaud.
The other trend that's definitely become very noticeable, and I think most hikers that are getting out there and being active over the last 5 to 10 years will have noticed, is the change to the meal availability for outdoor activities.
Oh, yes.
You know, 10, 20 years ago, you were very limited with choice. There weren't too many outdoor companies around. There was a limited range of what was there, and quite often the quality of food wasn't up to what you would expect to eat at home, and that's fine. That's not a problem. But, you know, you, if you're doing long trips, I love my food, so I like to eat really good food.
I have to say, some of those meat, and I'm doing inverted commas, meat meals that we had very early on were very, very ordinary and had some, you know, really disastrous biological impacts with two people living in a very small tent. But anyway.
So we've got new companies coming onto the market. We've got companies that have been around for a while releasing new ranges of high-quality food. There is good availability of food that just tastes good. Yeah, and yes, I know a lot of people like to dehydrate their own food. I just find it takes too much time, and when you rehydrate it, it just looks like mush. I think the dehydration process is very good. And they produce really good quality meals these days.
Yeah, and, you know, the freeze drying on top of that, and the vacuum sealing also makes them, you know, very, very lightweight and small. It's interesting around making your own food, because you've really got to be attached to, you know, your own cooking. And, you know, sometimes when you rehydrate your own food, it's not quite the same, and you put a huge amount of effort in, but I'm sure there are experts out there who can do it much better than us, and, you know, good luck to you. That's just not our thing.
And then the last one is wool and more wool. I think I you know, listening to again the interview with Smart Wool, you know, they talked about, you know, one stage polypropylene was seen as the big fabric. It was going to take over everything. It was going to replace all the natural fibres. I think wool, in Australia at least, is a very dominant fabric. Australians like wool. It breathes well. It typically doesn't smell badly, although you smell bad enough as a hiker. Nothing's going to improve that.
Yeah, depends how long you've been doing it, isn't it?
but certainly, you know, wool tends to not smell like synthetic fabric does. It lasts well. It is a natural fibre, so you're not manufacturing using chemicals, or at least you're minimising the impact by using mainly synthetic fibres, and wool is a good way to go.
Yeah, and it's interesting because those synthetic fibres that are marketed as not smelling, well, that's another process that they're doing on top of that for that to happen. And so, you know, if we're all about minimising the impact, doing the least that we possibly can to the materials that we end up wearing, I think is definitely the way to go. Wool plus the wood fibres, I think also that's another thing that's starting to become quite popular, so Tencel and other materials. So, you know, I think it's a good trend.
Okay, so that's all for this second of our two episodes for industry interviews for 2024.
Yeah, big thanks also to everyone that we interviewed, everyone who spent time with us at the expo and shared their knowledge and their new products and their potential new products that they're bringing out. So without that support, these last two, this episode and the one previous, wouldn't have happened. So thank everyone very much.
Yeah, greatly appreciated. The industry certainly has been very supportive of Australian Hiker, and we do appreciate it.
Generous with their time, absolutely, and all for you.
Okay, that's all for this week's episode. We hope you've enjoyed. Bye for now.
And bye from me.